Well, if you've not been here for one of our sermons in Proverbs, the book of Proverbs is a lot of, hence the name, Proverbs, quite short sayings, but they're often at random. So what we've been trying to do is bring them together in themes. And so that does involve a lot of bouncing all over the place. So do apologize for that. Feel free to just listen and follow along in that way. But I hope that you'll have something to think about from this book. That will help you think about the topic of friendship. The author, Henrik Ibsen, if that's how you pronounce his name, not a Christian as far as I'm aware, said this: "The strongest man in the world is he who stands most alone." I wonder whether you think that's true. As a true hero, one who goes into battle solo. Perhaps that's your view of history, that there's these great men and women who sort of stand against the tide and change history. And it can be a way people think of Christian history as well. For example, you might think of someone like a Martin Luther standing and say, "Here I stand, I can do no other," and everybody's against him. He's a lone voice. Is it true that going alone is what true heroism is? Well, the fact is, it doesn't fit reality, certainly in the Christian world. Martin Luther is an example. Well, he wasn't a loner. There were others alongside him, good friends who supported him. In fact, the only reason he survived that "Here I Stand" meeting is because some of his friends realized he was about to die and forced him to get in a carriage to go into hiding. And you go through history and you hear again and again these amazing people that we look at and we respect, how surrounded they were with friends. They did stand against the tide of the world, but they did not emphatically stand alone. And it's true in the Bible. Look at David. First, he was with Jonathan. And then, once Jonathan had gone to be with the Lord, he had his mighty men around him all the time. The point where David fell into temptation was when he was at home alone, when all of his friends were somewhere else. Well, then there's Paul. If you read the end of Paul's letters, you begin to wonder how on earth he can remember so much about so many people. And if you count all the times that he says, "Every time I pray, day and night, I pray for you," it just is astonishing. And then there's these deep friendships that we see in Acts and in his letters with Barnabas, Silas, Timothy, Titus, Luke, Aquila and Priscilla and dozens of others. He transformed the world alongside these great friends. Even Jesus went through his life with 12 disciples, didn't he? And other friends, Mary, Martha, and Lazarus are called his friends. Although the disciples didn't manage to stay awake in the garden to pray with him, that was what he wanted them to do. Even as he went to the cross, he wanted the support of his friends, even though sadly he didn't have it. It's sinful people who want to stand alone. They don't want to be challenged. The wise man wants friends. They want brothers and sisters in true fellowship, growing in likeness to Jesus. Proverbs assumes you will have friends. And while some of us may have stronger friendships and weaker friendships, I think most of us have someone in our life who's not part of our family, but who we're close to. Maybe at church, maybe at school, maybe at work, maybe in leisure activities, maybe someone that we went to school with many years ago that we still keep in contact with. It's quite good that we ended up talking about friendship tonight, because I'm aware that this morning might have felt a little bit alien if you're not married, when we were talking about marriage and family. It's not true for all of us, but really there's no one who needs to be without friends, whether you're married or not, whether you're old or young, whether you're male or you're female. You can have people speaking into your life. So Proverbs assumes that we have friendship. It's not going to argue that you should have them. It's just going to assume that you have. If you don't, Proverbs will give you a little nudge to say invest in those friendships in your life. What Proverbs really wants to do is ask us, what makes a good friend? And how can we find them? And how can we be them? And we're going to look at this in two halves. Almost the whole of Proverbs is exactly the same. There's the bad and there's the good. So the first, we're going to start with the negative, the characteristics of bad friends, which there are a lot. And then secondly, the characteristics of good friends. And we're going to hope that we're going to become better friends with each other as we meditate on these verses. Now, one quick thing to say before we begin. I'm told that the Hebrew word for friend is sometimes translated friend, and it's sometimes translated neighbor in our English version. And from one of the guys who wrote the commentaries, who's a scholar in these things, he says it's not always obvious what to translate it as. Because in the ancient world, you didn't have Facebook friends who lived on the other side of the world. Of course, all your friends probably lived in the same town or village as you. So there's a likelihood that friends and neighbours have a little bit of a crossover. There are a few occasions where it's very specifically neighbour, but you might see that some of these proverbs talk about neighbours, and we might think of that as a stranger who lives next door to us, or that we vaguely know. Whereas in the Bible's terms, it's assuming that neighbours and friends are both people who are outside of our family, but we have a fairly decent relationship with. So I hope that that makes sense as we go through. So let's start with the bad friend. Parents are often worried, aren't they, when their children fall in with a bad crowd. And yet, the Bible warns us that that can be the case for adults too. We can fall in with bad influences. There are 9 people who make bad friends in Proverbs. I'll try to be quick and get through them, but it's good to be aware of what this entails. Firstly, the first bad friend is the fool. Proverbs 14, verse 7. Stay away from a fool, for you will not find knowledge on their lips. Stay away from them. Don't bring them in close as a friend. If you've not been with us as we've gone through Proverbs, we've said time and time again, a fool is a combination of sinful and stupid. They make decisions that go after sin, go against God's rules, and they also make decisions that are foolish, that are stupid, that make their lives worse. And when you're around a person like that, they drag you down with them. They drag you into sin. They drag you into stupidity. Their advice is not going to be worth listening to. So a fool makes a bad friend. Secondly, the second bad friend is the godless person, those who reject God. So Proverbs 11, verse 9, says this. With their mouths, the godless destroy their neighbors, but through knowledge, the righteous escape. So the advice of godless people is corrosive. It destroys the people around them. The righteous escape. And the emphasis here is that they're escaping together, not separately. They're together escaping. In fact, wicked, godless people don't even desire to help other people. So Proverbs 21, verse 10, says, the wicked crave evil. Their neighbours get no mercy from them. Mercy here isn't so much about forgiveness, but it's about help in times of trouble. Neighbours and friends should be looking out for another person, giving them the helping hand, but the wicked and the godless are chasing so hard after sin, they have no time for the people around us. Now, we might want to be a bit cautious as we think about not having friends with godless people when we know that Jesus was known as a friend of sinners. How do we equate those two things? Well, I think the key here is that the Proverbs friend is particularly one, and we'll see this as we go through, who gives advice, who gives counsel, direction for your life. And so you can have a friend who doesn't believe in God, that you watch football with, you talk about the kids with, maybe you invite them to church, but they're not going to be the ones who are giving you that direction that's going to help you know how to live your life. Because without God in the picture, their wisdom is always going to be slightly warped away from the truth. So we've had the fool, we've had the godless. The next person is the leech. A leech sucks your blood, doesn't it? It takes without giving. And a leech friend only ever takes from you and never gives in return. Proverbs warns us that it's very hard to find good friends if you're poor because of the number of people who are primarily leeching off others in their friendship. So let me just quickly read these. You don't need to turn there. Proverbs 14:20. The poor are shunned even by their neighbours, but the rich have many friends. Proverbs 9:6-7. Many curry favour with a ruler, and everyone's a friend of one who gives gifts. The poor are shunned by all their relatives. How much more do their friends avoid them? Though the poor pursue them without pleading, they are nowhere to be found. Proverbs 19, verse 4. Wealth attracts many friends, but even the closest friend of the poor person deserts them. Now, Proverbs isn't saying this to say, make sure you're rich and then you'll have some friends. What it's pointing out is that many people in the world, when they're looking for friendship, they're really looking to take something from someone. And that's why the rich people have many friends surrounding them, because there's more they can give. And he's saying, be careful of that sort of friend. And we should also be careful of being a leech ourselves. Proverbs 25, verses 16 to 17, gives one of those wonderful Proverbs pictures. If you find honey, eat just enough, too much of it, and you will vomit. Seldom set foot in your neighbor's house. Too much of you, and they will hate you. The honey bit's an illustration. It's nice to have an occasional bit of honey, but if you eat honey all the time, you're going to be sick. And similarly, if you go around to your friend's house, they may be happy to have you there once every so often. But if you're there all the time, eating their food, getting in the way of their family life, they're going to be sick of you. It's as simple as that. It's pretty simple truth. So don't be a leech. Presumably, the assumption is that there'll be a give and take. Invite them to your house sometimes, as well as going to theirs. Be a service to your friend, not always taking from them. And we could expand that to other areas as well. Gossips are another category of bad friend. And one particular danger of the gossip is that they'll tear you away from all your other friendships. We read Proverbs 16:28, I think last week, certainly very recently, which you'll recognize. It says, a perverse person stirs up conflict and a gossip separates close friends. Imagine you have a slight disagreement with a friend. Probably you could leave it be and it will get covered over in a few weeks. Maybe a good friend would help you to be able to come back together and reconcile your friendship. But a gossip just loves to stir. They love the drama. And such people, they're going to be separating you from friend and friend and friend until you're left with them and you know that they're gossiping about you to someone else. They're a bad friend. Angry people are another type of bad friend. Proverbs 22, verses 25 to 26 say this. Sorry, 24 to 25. Do not make friends with a hot-tempered person. Do not associate with one easily angered, or you may learn their ways and get yourself ensnared. Some people are always on the verge of the next explosion. Some people are not worth associating with because they'll affect you. They'll get you on that short fuse that are very quick to blow off towards other people. Don't make friends with such people because you'll end up being like them. Next is the deceiver. Another great proverb here. Proverbs 26, 18 to 19. Like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is the one who deceives their neighbour and says, I was only joking. So that's an interesting one, isn't it? Or Proverbs 25, verse 18. Like a club or a sword or a sharp arrow is the one who gives false testimony against a neighbour. Whether it's as small as saying, I'm only joking, or as big as giving a false testimony in court, deceit is not something that's going to be a solid foundation for friendship. You want to be founded on honesty, not on deceit. Next one is a violent person. Proverbs 16:29 says this, a violent person entices their neighbor and leads them down a path that is not good. Or Proverbs 29:24, the accomplice of thieves are their own enemies. They are put under oath and dare not testify. So you see what's going on there. They're a friend of the thieves and therefore they're put under oath and they can't testify against their friends. Now all this might seem obvious, but think of the prevalence of gangs in many inner cities. They are not new. There were gangs in ancient Israel which young men were attracted to. Young men for thousands of years have been drawn to violent criminal types. They seem strong. They seem to know what they're doing. But their path is not good. Even if you're just an accomplice of them, you'll find yourself in court trembling to testify. I hope that most of us don't have violent friends, but I suspect you've got one of the next kind, the badly timed friend. These are friends who just do not have the ability to read the room. Proverbs 27, verse 14, we read before. I heard a few of you titter. It's okay. Most of the Proverbs are meant to be quite funny. If anyone loudly blesses their neighbor early in the morning, it will be taken as a curse. There's a right time for everyone, everything. If you come knocking down on a neighbor at 4 a.m. and say, God bless you, they are not going to take that as a blessing. That's the point. And so too, in all other areas of life, there's a right time to pray for someone, to teach someone, to encourage someone. There can be good things at wrong times. And badly timed friends constantly make the wrong decision about when to do certain things. Much worse are those that who are useless in times of trial. Proverbs 25:19. Like a broken tooth or a lame foot is reliance on the unfaithful in a time of trouble. Like one who takes away a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar poured on a wound, is one who sings songs to a heavy heart. Songs of joy are well and good at the right time. But when you are going through a time of suffering, they're like vinegar on the wound. Perhaps you've known that. Perhaps you've known people who you're going through a difficult time and they say, oh, look on the bright side. And yeah, there is a bright side, but maybe now is not the time to talk about it. A good friend knows that we weep with those who weep and we rejoice with those who rejoice. The final bad friend is one that you will probably actually quite like having around, and that is the flatterer. The flatterer will never say a bad word about you. They'll always tell you what you want to hear, and that is why they are incredibly dangerous. Proverbs 29, verse 5. Those who flatter their neighbours are spreading nets for their feet. A net is a trap, isn't it? You put it down, you cover it with leaves in the hope that you're going to catch, presumably, an animal by something that looks innocent, but is going to keep them locked up, that is going to take away their freedom. It's nice to be told you're a wonderful person with nothing wrong in your life. But what if you're not? What if you're a sinner who's ruining their life and everybody around you can see that except you? A flatterer may be good for your ego, but they're not going to be good in the long run. So there's the list of bad friends: the fool, the godless, the leech, the gossip, the angry, the deceiver, the violent, the bad-timed, and the flatterer. Perhaps you can think of a few people in your life who've fit one of those categories. Perhaps, sadly, you might think of how you have fit many of those categories at times with friends in your life. You might sympathise with what is said in Proverbs 20, verse 6. Many claim to have unfailing love, but a faithful person who can find. And that's not talking about marriage in the original. It's male, it's written to a man, so we're not talking about a husband or wife, we're talking about a friend. Many claim in their friendship to have an unfailing love, that they will love you forever as a friend, but a faithful friend, a faithful man who can find. Worst of all, we have to frequently admit that we aren't worth the friendship of others. How often have we given foolish advice, or lost our cool, or spread gossip, or flattered rather than told the truth? And that's not to our worst enemies, it's those closest to us. Thankfully, we have a great friend. There's a lovely hymn, but it's not in our hymn book, nor is it in Christian hymns. I'm not sure where I've heard it, but anyway, maybe some of you will know it. It says, I found a friend, oh, such a friend. He bled, he died to save me. And not alone the gift of life, but his own self he gave me. We have a good friend. We have one who loved us, even though we didn't deserve to be loved. A friend of sinners. By his death on the cross, he paid the price for those sins. But here is something even sweeter. He calls us friends without condition. And yet he calls us to follow his example. He puts his spirit in us to sanctify us. He puts us among his other friends in churches. All of us are works in progress, which means we'll play the bad friend sometime and we'll have to repent. But by God's grace, hopefully, this is a place where those bad friendships are being fought and good friendships are being nurtured. Do such good friends exist, though? Do good friends exist? Well, believe it or not, Proverbs wants to assure us that even despite all those bad friends, such a good friend does exist. Proverbs 18:24, one who has unreliable friends soon comes to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Certain friendships are unreliable. They last for a time, but they're not enough to base a life upon. But there is a friend that sticks closer than a brother. I think of Paul, who was locked away in a prison, facing death in the province of Asia, and everyone in Asia pretended they wanted nothing to do with him, except Onesiphorus. No one, Paul told Timothy, wanted anything to do with him, but Onesiphorus often refreshed me, he said. And maybe he means he took him a drink, but I suspect there's something a bit deeper to it than that. Such friends do exist, friends that stick closer than a brother. In the darkest place, they refresh us. Those friendships don't tend to happen by accident, though. These friends are chosen. Of course, so long as it depends on us, we're friendly towards everyone. But when choosing those deep friends that you rely on in times of trial, we need to be more cautious. Proverbs 12:26 tells us this. The righteous choose their friends carefully, but the way of the wicked leaves them astray. Hanging around with wicked friends leads you astray. So wise Christians choose those friends carefully. What we look for in friends is often very surface level, isn't it? Are they the same age as me? Do we like the same leisure activities? These kind of things don't make much of a difference. Take age, for example. David and Jonathan are the Bible's best-known close friends. As I told you as we went through Samuel, there was around 20 to 30 years between them. Jonathan was a lot older than David. There was a big age gap, but it didn't stop them being really close friends. Jesus' disciples were mostly teenagers while he was 30. It's not about age. It's not about ethnicity. It's not about what things you do in your spare time. We don't look for the world's metrics. And you'll see it amongst people here. You'll see old and young, different races, different socioeconomic backgrounds, male and female, all these people being close friends to each other. Because friendship is not just about being the same. No, something deeper. And Proverbs has four key characteristics to look for. First, a good friend is wise. Proverbs 13:20. Walk with the wise and become wise, for a companion of fools suffers harm. To walk with someone is to live life together. When you walk with a fool, you end up going to the destination they're going, which is destruction. But when you walk with the wise, you become like them. There's a secular proverb in our day that gets across the same idea. Have you ever heard the phrase, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with? Maybe you've heard that phrase. I find that quite a helpful way to think about it. Who are the five people I spend the most time with? And do I want to be like them? Good people sharpen one another. As Proverbs 27:17 puts it, as iron sharpens iron, so one person sharpens another. That means first and foremost that a deep friendship can't really exist between a Christian and a non-Christian, as we said before, because you're going different places. You have different goals. Your deepest relationships will be with other believers, and they will be Christians that you generally look up to, Christians that you want to go on the same journey that they're going on. I wonder who's someone that you look up to as a Christian. They might be older, they might be younger, they might be married while you're single or vice versa. They might be a young mum while you're a widow, it doesn't matter. You want to be like the wise, who's a wise person. Of course, we do have to care for people who aren't wise. We want to witness to those who aren't believers, we want to support younger Christians. But for those deep friendships that you can depend on, you should look for someone who is going in the same direction you are, someone who is wise. So a good friend's wise. Next, a good friend is faithful. Proverbs 17, verse 17 says this. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for a time of adversity. You don't know who your friends really are until suffering strikes. Many will back away in times of trial. They care what you can do for them, not what they can do for you. If you go through a hard time, the true friends will reveal themselves. And it might not be who you expect, but those are the ones to stick with. And of course, try to be there for other people. Be the one who sticks with people, even when times are tough. Before we move on from faithfulness, I want to do what I often have to do at some point, which is talk about quite an enigmatic proverb, which is Proverbs 27, verse 10, which is quite a strange one. You might want to turn there because it's so unusual. Proverbs 27, verse 10 says, "Do not forsake your friend or a friend of your family," all fine so far, "and do not go to your relative's house when disaster strikes you. Better a neighbor nearby than a relative far away." So the first bit's easy to understand. Be a faithful person, whether to a friend or even a family friend, a friend of your father's, I think it is in the original. Don't forsake them. Be devoted to good friendships. But what about that last part? It says don't go to your relative, literally brother, when you're in hardship, if you've got a neighbor who's closer at hand. Now, what I said about neighbor before is not true here. This is an unusual word that is always translated neighbor because it does mean the people who live nearby you. So it definitely means someone nearby. You can understand that. A good friend is faithful and they're nearby. They can actually help. And often, a distant family member, as good as they are, they're not going to be the same as a friend close at hand who can come and sit with you when you're weeping, who can cook you a meal when you need it. Sometimes friendships are born out of the people who are there right now who can help you, even if there's someone that you love more but is a little distant. These are the faithful friends. So a good friend is wise, a good friend is faithful. But there's a danger we might have such a high standard that no one meets it. So it's important to understand that a good friend is also forgiving. Proverbs 17, verse 9 says this: "Whoever would foster love covers over an offence, but whoever repeats the matter separates close friends." We talked about that last week, but notice how it's related to friendship too. If you want that kind of friendship love that we've spoken of, you can't go passing on every failing of your friend to other people. You cover over their friendships rather than their offences rather than separating close friends. Now, how does that relate to what we saw before? Aren't we meant to reject bad friends? Well, Proverbs is telling us, when it talks about these bad friends, not to drop a friendship the moment that a single sin is committed. But look at the habitual pattern of a person's way of life. If they are habitually violent or habitually foolish or habitually flattering, then they have a problem. Every friend has their foibles. You're not going to find a perfect one, and if you do, you better get away because you're only going to spoil them. So be quick to forgive those one-off sins. Be forgiving again and again and again, but you may not want to give yourself fully into friendship if someone is characteristically given to a sin that could affect your walk with the Lord as well. But be quick to forgive, and those friendships will often flourish into those that are more wise, more faithful in the long run. The final feature of a good friend is the most frequently mentioned, but will probably be the one that you're not looking for at the moment, which is a good friend is wounding. That is someone who is going to tell you the harsh truths, who's going to give you some wounds. Proverbs 27, verses 5 to 6, the one Russ put up before the service. "Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Wounds from a friend can be trusted, but an enemy multiplies kisses." An enemy doesn't want you to know that they're an enemy, so they'll give you lots of kisses. And I presume this is not romantic. And when I was in Italy, there was that awkward thing where all the men are kissing each other and you're kind of trying not to be the weird, freaked out English person. I think that's the idea here. The enemy say, "Oh, it's lovely to see you." Hugs, handshakes, "Oh, my good friend." But someone who loves you, they're not going to be unwilling to point out a wound that is going to make you better. When we were on holiday, I managed to get two splinters in one of my feet. I was chasing after Isaac in my bare foot around the caravan site, and I got these splinters in. And I thought, I can't be bothered getting them out, I'll be fine. 2 days later, they're really deep in there and they're really starting to hurt. So Nat had to dig into my foot with the needle. And it didn't feel like she loved me at that point in time, let me say it like that. But it was the far kinder thing to do because they were starting to get infected. They needed to be dug out. That temporary pain, which is much better than the long-term pain that would have come if they'd not been taken out. Some of our sins have got so deep, they need to be dug out. And our friends do us no favour if they cover those things up. This is not fly-by Pharisees who are like, you're sinful with this, you're sinful with that, you're sinful with the other. It's a faithful friend, perhaps one of the one or two people that you're closest with in the world, who wants us to be the person God wants us to be. Sadly, our faults are much more visible to the people around us than they are to us. Just like if I had a big mud mark on my forehead, you would all know about it and I would not. So our sin is often obvious to those around us, but not so obvious to us. Challenging a good relationship can be hard, but it's vital. I think it's especially hard nowadays. I think we in our culture tend to see friendship as agreeing all the time. But the Bible calls that flattery. We're often nervous to step into a situation. It's much wiser than being a hypocrite proudly handing out bad wisdom, but it can also come from a cowardice that doesn't serve our friends well. But you might say, I've done this before and friends have cut ties with me because of what I've said. What can I do? Well, perhaps Proverbs 28:23 might give some hope. It says, whoever rebukes a person will in the end gain favour rather than one who has a flattering tongue. I think in the end is doing the heavy lifting in that sentence. Prepare yourself. It is very rare when you point out someone's sins that they say, thank you so much, brother. And they really take it on board and they love you. And they say, why don't we meet up at the weekend for a round of golf or something like that? No, they are probably going to respond quite negatively because none of us like to have our sin pointed out. But in the end, they'll realise that what we've done is far kinder than letting the sin fester. If you want to put it more positively, clearly I'm a negative person because I went for wounding. There is another metaphor that Proverbs 27 verse 9 uses, which is the image of perfume. So if you prefer that, you might want to take that on board. Perfume and incense bring joy to the heart, and the pleasantness of a friend springs from their heartfelt advice. Heartfelt advice, that deep advice that only a friend can bring, that's what makes a friend good. So what is the good friend? Someone who's wise, faithful, forgiving, and occasionally wounding. Again, no friend is better than Jesus. Who else has every word from his mouth pouring out God's wisdom? Who else was faithful, even to the point of death, when we were faithless towards him? Who else forgave our sin when we didn't deserve it? Who else wounds us, but not to cut, but to heal? That's why we need Jesus most of all. He should be out of our reach. He should be someone that no one should ever have a hope of being friends with. And yet he said to his disciples, not just for them, but for all time, I have called you friends. What a privilege that is. However, that isn't to say we're to retreat to a monastery for friendship with Jesus alone. No, Jesus wants us to be transformed by friendship with him so that we can be good friends to one another. So what should you do with what you've heard today? Well, firstly, repent. If you see some aspects that you've been a bad friend, repent of them. Maybe there is a specific instance where you have been a poor friend and you need to actually speak to someone and apologise to them. Perhaps it's just a general character that you need to watch out for. You have a tendency to gossip or to flatter in your conversations. Whether it's specific or general, confess it to God. It's not going to change overnight, but it's going to be vital for your spiritual growth. Secondly, regarding bad friends, you might need to withdraw. That doesn't mean being a terrible human being, but it maybe means stop turning to the person who, when you go to, they'll join you with complaining, or they'll maybe tempt you into worse ways of life. Slowly stop turning to those people for advice and start turning to the people you can really trust. And thirdly and finally, invest in good friendships. They are a real blessing. They take time, and we should be doing them primarily for the other and not to leech off someone else. Check in on someone, invite them for food, pray with them, don't go to the house too much. Realize who your real friends are and make the most of them. Friendship is a gift from God. Try your best to be the best picture of God you can be in your friendship to those around you.